doorway to the second coming teaching. This second coming business, that is fertile ground for religious nuts. There's been all kinds of, you know, nutty things done concerning the second coming for hundreds of years, you know that. Jesus is coming back tonight. Hey, they still claim he came back in 1914, you know, that filled with witnesses.
Yeah.
He came, you just didn't see him, so there. And, of course, they don't agree with the other groups because they all claim that he came back other days. In other words, they're claiming he's going to come back. Jesus mentioned that in this chapter. He said, don't listen to them. But you've heard them doing that. And in that we are openly pointing to the second coming and more defining the area of time, not pointing to the day or hour, but more and more clearly we'll be seeing what part of the night he's coming in. As we're told, you also must know what part of the night he's coming in. As you see the day approaching, as these things get pointed out more and more clearly, we're going to be more and more vulnerable to all kinds of ridiculous attacks. Because they're not going to take the trouble to check the background, just as they don't now. And there's nothing strange being said or done now. Well, it's just that I make $43,000 a week. That's all that happens now. But now wait till there's some direct statement. Remember how they mocked Noah?
Yes.
Well, things like that are bound to occur. Because the day will become more and more apparent as we draw closer. Those who are wise, that is, who are faithful, and who study the Bible as it's meant to be studied, are going to see the proof for the strange-looking statements. They'll understand what to do and why. But to the others, it'll just look foolish. The trouble is, that's what all the nuts say, too. They've all said, look, if you don't listen, you know, you'll just look bad or something. And it sounds too much like the real thing. The devil has a smoke screen, as it were, so that the real thing doesn't get seen. You're all aware of that technique.
Yeah.
Muddying the waters so that nothing is clear. But we're going to, all along, the idea is that the second coming workbook be going to the basics and making them crystal clear. Then proceeding with the other workbooks into the sheet area, going into the second coming deeper, and of course the sheet workbooks also go into interpretation, witnessing, all the other things on a deeper level, to prepare you for school, which is a deeper level yet. And after going through all the stages and assimilating the material and the understanding, then and only then are you in a position to intelligently discuss why we believe what we believe. But I suspect that anyone who saw the plan in the first place, if they really saw it and were looking for it, would have to admit its existence and would themselves become believers. So I suppose all those who mock will be ill-informed. These men make assertions about things they do not understand. Let's read Matthew 24 and 25, looking for content and the framework, the structure of the line running through it. Let's start reading out loud. Now, you know, Matthew 24 and Matthew 25, the two go together, of course, and yet they're quite different. I just said a few weeks ago, why they're quite different. Does anybody understand why they are, other than the ones I told? What's so different about them? Specific. 25 is more background attitudes. 24 deals with specifics. 24 is full of the clues as to the period of time. Tonight. Notice time in chapter 24.
Yes.
There are time things in 25 too. But far more specific clues as to the time of his coming. It's also the chapter that spells out of that day and hour no one knows. So that's that. One of the rules, 157 rules for interpreting, is whenever a flat statement is made by Jesus, everything else bends to it. You don't bend the flat statements to apparent figurative ideas. So look for the flat statements first. That's a rather flat statement. No one knows, not even the Son. The Father only. It's spelled out. So we don't know the day or hour, but we must know the period of time. Know that the scripture says, as you see the day approaching. How are you going to see the day approaching? By standing on the watchtower, by seeing messengers coming to you, as it were, telling you. Another way that you know is this teaching here, verse 43. The householder had known in what part of the night he would have watched. Therefore, you also must be ready. Because you don't know the exact moment of his coming, but you know the period of his coming. And you must be awake throughout the whole period. Now, everyone sleeps. So we go into the ten maidens. They all slumbered and slept. But the wise virgins got ready ahead of time. They knew they had to sleep, but they got ready for it. So when the cry went up, he's coming very shortly, quick they all got ready. They were in a state of readiness. So that when he did appear, they didn't know a moment before that he was going to appear, but when he did, they were ready. That's the way we have to be. But there are specific signs in there concerning the ends throughout 24. A whole bunch of them. Now that's 45 through 51. Set in the context of Jesus' return. It being the last of 24, it being the end of the specific signs. Do you hear that?
Yes.
It would be hard to try to argue that that does not mean a particular human if Jesus is to appear at a certain moment, and remember, Paul used this language, we who are left alive, Thessalonians, which we'll read later, will be caught up to meet him in the air, remember?
Yes.
We who are left alive. That phrase right there, the whole teaching about Jesus' second coming, that it is physical, that it happens at a point in time. There's going to come an instant when this happens. Follow us that there are going to be people around here. Who are going to be caught up, as it says. That's so obvious. But this thing here, set into that context, is saying that somehow there's going to be a servant at the end feeding his people their food at the right season. Now, you can argue it, and there's good grounds for it. It means a whole church. For instance, Israel is called the servant. So is Jesus. And that's a pattern throughout the prophets. And somebody, at least now, because I don't know that clearly, to argue necessarily one way or the other. Maybe it is both, I don't know. But maybe it is a church, the whole fellowship, or maybe it is an individual. It seems to me, more probably, both.